darklings, and welcome to the Nocturnal Mysteries Podcast, a show about the paranormal, supernatural, mysterious, and things that go bump in the night. I'm your host, Jenny. Please come and join me. Sit down and place your fingers on the planchette, and let's jump right into this nocturnal mystery. Listener, during the 1800s and early 1900s, America was ravaged by a deadly disease known by many as the White Death, tuberculosis. This terrifying and very contagious plague, for which no cure existed, claimed entire families, and sometimes entire towns. In 1900, Louisville, Kentucky had the highest tuberculosis death rate in America. As it was built on low swampland, the area was the perfect breeding ground for the disease. In 1910, a hospital was constructed on a windswept hill in southern Jefferson County that had been designed to combat the horrific disease. Although the disease continued to run rampant throughout the region, eventually, with donations of money and land, a new hospital was started in 1924. The new structure, known as Waverly Hills, opened 2 years later in 1926. It was considered the most advanced tuberculosis sanatorium in the country. But even then, most of the patients still succumbed to the disease. There was no medicine available at the time to treat the disease, and so all that could be offered to the patient was rest, fresh air, and nutritious food. Sadly, the main use for the hospital was to isolate those who had come down with the disease from those who had not. Families were tragically divided, with parents and even children forced into the sanatorium with little contact with their loved ones. Treatments for tuberculosis were sometimes as harsh as the disease itself. Some of the experiments that were conducted in search of a cure seemed barbaric by today's standards, but others are now common practice. Patients' lungs were exposed to ultraviolet light to try and stop the spread of bacteria. This was done in sunrooms using artificial light in place of sunlight, or on the roof or open porches of the hospital. Since fresh air was thought to be a possible cure, patients were often placed in front of huge windows or on the open porches, no matter what the season. Old photographs show patients lounging in chairs, taking in the fresh air, while literally covered with snow. Other treatments were less pleasant and much bloodier. Balloons would be surgically implanted in the lungs and then filled with air to expand them. Needless to say, this often had disastrous results, as did an operation where muscles and ribs were removed from a patient's chest to allow the lungs to expand further and let in more oxygen. This blood-soaked procedure was seen as a last resort, and the mortality rate was high. While the patients who managed to survive both the disease and the treatments left Waverly Hills through the front door, many others left through what came to be known as the body chute. This enclosed tunnel for the dead led from the hospital to the railroad tracks at the bottom of the hill. Using a motorized rail and cable system, the bodies were lowered in secret to the waiting trains. This was done so that patients would not see how many were leaving the hospital as corpses. Their mental health, the doctors believed, was just as important as their physical health. There are many inaccurate reports as to how many people died during Waverly Hills' decades of operation. Legends claim that tens of thousands died within the walls of the hospital, but many believe this number is greatly exaggerated. According to Dr. J. Frank Stewart, a former assistant medical director at the hospital, The highest number of deaths to occur at Waverly Hills in a single year was 152. By 1955, those numbers had dropped to as low as 42 deaths, and it has been estimated, based on death certificates that were filed, that approximately 6,000 people died there, dating all the way back to the original hospital records from 1911. While far short of the numbers being claimed in the legends, it is still a tremendous number of deaths to have occurred in a single structure. By the late 1930s, tuberculosis had begun to decline around the world, and by 1943, streptomycin had largely eradicated the disease in the United States. A small jump in new cases did occur after World War II, and many soldiers returning from the war were housed at Waverly Hills. Dr. Stewart noted in his autobiography that many of the soldiers had cases that were so advanced that they did not live for more than a week after arriving at the hospital. In 1961, Waverly Hills was closed down, but was reopened a year later as Woodhaven Geriatrics Sanatorium. There have been many rumors and stories told about patient mistreatment and unusual experiments during the years that the building was used as an old age home. Some of them have proven to be false, but others have unfortunately turned out to be true. Electroshock therapy, which was considered to be highly effective in those days, was widely used for a variety of ailments. Budget cuts in the 1960s and 1970s led to both horrible conditions and patient mistreatments, and in 1982, the state finally closed the facility for good. Is it any wonder, after all of the death, pain, and agony within these walls, that Waverly Hills is considered to be one of the most haunted places in America? The buildings and land were auctioned off and changed hands many times over the course of the next two decades. In 1983, a developer purchased the property with plans to turn it into a minimum security prison for the state of Kentucky. Plans were dismissed after neighbors protested and a new idea to turn the former hospital into apartments was devised. A lack of financing eventually caused this plan to be abandoned. In March 1966, Waverly Hills and the surrounding land was bought by Robert Alberhasky, who ran the Christ the Redeemer Foundation, Incorporated. His plan was to construct the world's tallest statue of Jesus on the Waverly site, along with an art and worship center. The statue, which was inspired by the famed Christ the Redeemer statue in Rio de Janeiro, was to be situated on the roof of the hospital at a cost of about $4 million. The second phase of his plan was to convert the sanatorium into a chapel, theater, and gift shop for another $8 million. Not surprisingly, donations to the project fell far short of what was expected. During the first year, only $3,000 was raised toward the effort, and the project was officially canceled in December of 1997. Alberhasky then abandoned the Waverly Hills property, and in order to recoup some of his costs, he tried to have the property condemned so that the buildings could be torn down and redeveloped. This plan was blocked by the county, and according to rumor, demolition work was then done around the southern edge of the building in order to undermine the structural foundations and collect insurance money. This scheme also failed, and in 2001, Waverly Hills was sold to Charlie and Tina Mattingly, the current owners of the property. By 2001, the once stately building had nearly been destroyed by time, the elements, and the vandals who came here looking for a thrill. Waverly Hills had become the local haunted house, and it also became a magnet for the homeless looking for shelter and teenagers who broke in looking for ghosts. The hospital soon gained a reputation for being haunted, and stories began to circulate of resident ghosts, like the little girl who was seen running up and down the third floor solarium, the little boy who was spotted with a leather ball, the hearse that appeared in the back of the building dropping off coffins, the woman with the bleeding wrists who cried for help, and many others. Visitors told of slamming doors, lights in windows as if the power was still running through the building, strange sounds and eerie footsteps in empty rooms, and shadow people. Other legends told of a man in a white coat who was seen walking in the kitchen and the smell of cooking food that sometimes wafted through the room. The kitchen was a disaster, a ruin of broken windows, fallen plaster, broken tables and chairs, and puddles of water and debris that resulted from a leaking roof. The cafeteria had not fared much better. Even so, a number of people have reported footsteps in the room, a door swinging shut under its own power, and the smell of fresh baked bread in the air. Perhaps the greatest and most controversial legend of Waverly Hills was connected to the fifth floor of the building. This floor of the old hospital consisted of two nurses' stations, a pantry, a linen room, medicine room, and two medium-sized rooms on both sides of the nurses' stations. One of these rooms, room 502, is the subject of many rumors and legends, and just about every curiosity seeker that has broken into Waverly Hills over the years has wanted to see it. This is where, according to the stories, people have seen shapes moving in the windows, have heard disembodied voices, and, if the legends are to be believed, have even jumped to their deaths. There are a lot of legends about what went on in this part of the hospital, but perhaps the biggest misconception was that this was a floor used to house mentally ill tuberculosis patients. This was not the case. The patients here were not insane, nor were they confined to their rooms. They were free to move about, just like patients on all of the other floors of the hospital. This floor, thanks to its design, allowed patients to still benefit from the fresh air and sunshine that was believed to cure, or at least extend the life of those with the disease. It was centered in the middle of the hospital, and the two wards extending out from the nurses' station were glassed in on all sides and opened out onto a patio-type roof. According to the stories, a nurse was found dead in room 502 in 1928. She had committed suicide by hanging herself from the light fixture. She was 29 years old at the time of her death, unmarried and pregnant. Her depression over the situation led her to take her own life. It is unknown how long she may have been hanging in this room before her body was discovered. And this would not be the only tragedy to occur with a connection to room 502. In 1932, another nurse who worked in the same room jumped from the roof patio and plunged several stories to her death. No one seems to know why she would have done this, but many have speculated that she may have actually been pushed over the edge. There are no records to indicate this, but rumors continue to persist. Those are the stories anyways. As with so many legends, no records exist to say that any of this actually happened. There are also conflicting accounts as to how the woman managed to hang herself. Some say that she did it from the light fixture, others from the pipe over the door, and some say from the rafters. There are no rafters. The pipe over the door was part of a sprinkler system installed in 1972, and the light fixture is hung on a light decorative chain that would not hold the weight of a person. There is no actual documentation of either death, although some claim the stories were verified by a former staff member, John Thornberry, who died in 2006. According to his obituary, he was born in 1922, which would have made him 16 years old at the time of the alleged deaths that were connected to room 502, This makes his verification more than a little problematic. So what happened in room 502 that could cause so many people to claim paranormal experiences there? Is it overactive imaginations, or is it something real? It's hard to say, but it seems likely that something occurred in that room to cause the legend to take root in the first place. What might have been, no one knows. The story of Room 502 may have been loosely based on some forgotten fact, but the truth remains buried under all the speculation and rumor. In spite of this, strange things continue to be reported. Over the course of the next year, volunteers working toward the restoration of the building experienced ghostly sounds, heard slamming doors, saw lights appear in the building where there should have been none, had objects thrown at them, were struck by unseen hands, saw apparitions in doorways and corridors, and much more. With a haunted history like this, and so many rumors of paranormal activity, it is no surprise that many television shows have attended the site to complete paranormal investigations. The television show Ghost Hunters visited the site twice, and their findings were interesting. They originally visited due to numerous reports they received of objects being thrown at unsuspecting guests, shadow figures, haunting moans, and hissing sounds. Paranormal researcher Kristen Luman reported that even before they entered the abandoned hospital, she could feel an eerie sadness enveloping the place. During their investigation, they encountered what they referred to as a prankster ghost. There were two interactions with this ghost, one where he threw a rock at a crew member. As they were investigating the third floor, the investigators experienced some unusual activity, particularly surrounding the walkie-talkies when they suggested the spirits investigate them. During their attempted communication with the ghost, one of the walkie-talkies began going off by means of instrumental transcommunication, a type of EVP that interprets spirit voices. They could hear static through the walkie-talkie, but also reported that it sounded like a voice was trying to break through. During the investigation, they came across an interesting finding with a female caretaker who worked at Waverly Hills, communicating via control questions with the tri-field meter. Getting responses right on cue with the aid of their device, it is reported that the room became instantly lighter after the heated and vibrant exchange, leading some to think that they helped a spirit cross over. The investigation team uses state-of-the-art technology to understand the spirit world better, like the Van de Graaff device, which pumps out energy into the air, based on the theory that it helps entities utilize that source for an entity to manifest. They received little results with this device. Today, Waverly is visited by thousands of people each year in search of history, architecture, and the paranormal. They offer historical tours, paranormal tours, as well as both public and private investigations. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Nocturnal Mysteries Podcast. I will be back in 2 weeks' time with a new episode for you. If you would like to keep up with the show, you can follow me on Instagram at Nocturnal Mysteries Pod, on TikTok at Nocturnal Mysteries, or X at Noctmist Pod. After the episode releases, make sure to check out the show's TikTok, as I usually post a video with pictures of the site. If you have anything you would like to hear me cover on the show, please don't hesitate to reach out on social media and let me know. Also, I am honored to be a part of Bad Secret Media with one of my personal favorite podcasts, the Secret Levels Podcast. You can go to badsecretmedia.com to find all the information on all the shows that fall under the Bad Secret Media umbrella. If you would like to support the show, the best thing you can do is rate or review the show wherever you listen to it. This will help others find the show and share in the spooky with the rest of us. All episodes are researched and written by myself and edited by the man behind the mysteries, the show's executive producer, Toby Von Doom. You can find him on social media at Toby Von Doom. Until next time, stay curious, stay weird, stay kind, and before leaving the board, don't forget to always say goodbye.